Julianne Good, and this is Psych 101. Welcome. We're here to make psychology more understandable, entertaining, and enlightening, with some tips to help you and your family to live better lives. Tonight, my guest is Kevin Bergen, MFT, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about Kevin. He is a marriage and family therapist in Torrance, California, and is the clinical director of the Center for Counseling, Recovery, and Growth. He is a graduate of Pepperdine University. He trained for a year at a South Bay domestic violence clinic, and he presently works with substance and behavioral addictions. His specialties at the Center for Counseling, Recovery, and Growth are couples counseling and men's issues such as addictions, careers, and relationships. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Julianne?
Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for being a guest.
No problem. I'm really privileged.
I would like to start off, since we're going to be talking about this theme tonight, what is positive psychology?
Positive psychology is a big term that's being thrown around right now, and it can be either something very specific with a certain set of themes and approaches, or something more broad, and that's the way I look at it, something more broad that helps us get a mindset, and from that mindset, it helps us accomplish things in our lives.
Such as what type of things to accomplish?
Well, really, the field is wide open when we talk like that. When we look at something from a negative point of view, when we see the glass half empty, the glasses that we come up to are more likely to be half empty or even more than half empty. When we look at things from a positive point of view, we tend to find and note the things that are more positive, and we can really navigate and orchestrate how we want our life to be when we're looking for the positive things.
Yes, I would imagine that it's a lot easier to approach issues from a positive perspective, and maybe sometimes that might be a little more difficult because I think when most people have issues, they tend to sink into maybe depression or self-pity or, like you said, the more negative aspects of approaching life sometimes.
That's exactly right, and it's human nature to pay more attention to the things that are going wrong. For instance, if we're driving down the road, we hit a red light, you know, we might slap the steering wheel and it's like, darn it, I missed that light again. But we're less likely, as we're going down the road, when we make a green light, to make as big an issue out of the positive as we made out of the negative and say, wow, I made a green light. This is fantastic. And if we can balance that, just even balance it just a little better than that, and make such a big deal out of the positives as we do the negatives, things are going to go generally better for us.
Yeah, and it's going to be a lot more pleasant for those people who are around us also. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Makes a big difference when it comes to relationships, too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, instead of sinking into, you know, like you said, what may be the, you know, the automatic reaction of not having such a good day.
Right, exactly. Waking up on a June morning in Southern California and saying, oh, this weather is terrible because there's a marine layer there, as opposed to waking up and saying, isn't this great that I live in California where I can go out in flip-flops and shorts and a T-shirt?
Yeah, most of the year.
Yeah, it doesn't change what the weather is. It's how we look at it that makes the difference.
Exactly. Yeah, turn around the June gloom, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, Kevin, it sounds like you've worked with a wide variety of clients. You know, with such a variety, how do you approach the positive psychology end of it? What would be a typical session for you?
That's a great question because I do see a lot of different clients. Even though my specialties include relationships, and that includes any kind of relationship, usually it's a couple, but it can also be roommates, it could be neighbors, it could be coworkers, could be a boss, employee, kind of relationship. And then I also specialize in sex addictions, addictions of all kind, but I specialize in sex addiction. And those two things seem to kind of go back and forth. Sometimes I'll see a couple and find out that there's some kind of sexual misbehavior going on, and I may work with just the husband for a while, or I may get a man come to me and have problems with staying away from pornography, for example, and maybe his job is in jeopardy because he just can't stay offline and looking at these sites at work. And that might turn into some couples work with his wife, because she often needs some input. She needs some help. She needs to make some sense out of what's going on. So with that kind of stuff, as well as a depressed client that comes in, or somebody who's trying to find some satisfaction in their current career or make some changes with their career, this is quite a diverse population. And what I'm finding is that so many of them have a problem looking at what they're doing in their lives, how they're looking at their lives. If they're listening to radio doom and gloom in their head all the time, then what they're going to say out loud is usually going to be more negative. What they're thinking is negative, and their life is going to be more negative. And so when I have this diverse population that comes to see me, I recognize the most common thread that comes through is their need to look at life in a more positive sense. And it makes such a big deal when they do this.
Yeah, and then you have to be kind of a psychological archaeologist and dig in and figure out, okay, they've got to be excited about something. Something's got to give them happiness somewhere along the line, because they can't be doing doom and gloom 24/7, correct?
That's absolutely right. But they can't be Pippi Longstocking 24/7
right.
either, and everything being so positive and wonderful. So it's about meeting the client where they are. That's something that I've been blessed with a skill to be able to do, is meet somebody right where they are and take them from there. Some people aren't really ready to implement the tools that I give most of my clients. And I have to scale back, and I have to decide, okay, what's your capacity? Where are you? What can you do? And it's all about the action. What can you do? Some people can do very little, but for them, it's a big step.
Right. And just taking responsibility for their own lives. And
absolutely.
Being able to look at it honestly and pick through it with you can be very challenging.
You know, and that challenge is often that idea of responsibility. Some people come in to see me and they say, well, they don't say it in words, but their basic message is, I'm not happy, fix me. And they want me to act on them and make some change or difference in their life. And that's really not my role. That's not the role of a therapist, to swoop in and change somebody. The responsibility comes in when I can help them realize it's up to them to make the changes, and they have a responsibility to act and make a difference.
And it's empowering.
I'm all out of pixie dust.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's empowering once they finally take that control back of their lives and go, wow, I can make these changes. Even though I was set, you know, told by multiple people, you know, you're always going to be what you are. And, you know, especially sometimes by family members. Okay, you were like this when you were, you know, 7 years old, and you're going to be like that for the rest of your life. But change is always, always inevitable. I mean, that's one of the things that we can count on, is change in our lives.
That's what's so, one of the things so satisfying to me in the work that I do, because I completely switched careers in the late 90s. And now I go home at night and I have this sense that I made a difference today. I made a difference in somebody's life because I see this change, and I get to be an agent of that change. I'm not changing people, but I simply get to be an agent where I can teach tools And then I watch them implement these things, and it's so satisfying to be able to see this blossoming that happens with people that come to me. And sometimes it's pretty quick. Sometimes people come in and maybe I see them for 6-8 sessions, sometimes 10 sessions. Others, I've worked with some clients for over 5 years. So it really depends on what they're coming in with. And when I can point out to them, when they're saying things like, oh, it doesn't seem like I'm making much difference, and I'm still dealing with the same things that I came in with, and I point to them, I said, yeah, you know, your goal seems pretty far off now, doesn't it? And they're, yeah, and their head is nodding. They'll say, it just seems so far off. And I said, do me a favor. Figuratively turn around, look at where you've come from. When you first came into the office, think of these things that you were struggling with. And I'll name off some of these presenting problems that they arrived with. And they then see, wow, I didn't really realize how far I've come. And it makes such a difference when they get that perspective. Their goal may seem far off, but it seems more comforting and more productive when they can look back and say, boy, I really have come a long way.
Yeah, that is wonderful to hear that. And it's wonderful that you're able to take people through sometimes what feels like baby steps towards change, and taking sometimes lifelong patterns of dysfunction and turning them around so that their lives are better, because you're helping them. You're going step by step, and you're being patient with them and compassionate.
And you know what, Julianne, for so many people, that's just what they need, is somebody to be patient with them. Because maybe that was their dad or their mom or a school teacher or an older brother or sister who wasn't patient, was pushing them or pulling them and criticizing them. And every one of us, I don't care if you're a client, I don't care if you're a therapist, I don't care if you're a successful businessman out in the world, I don't care if you're a happy stay-at-home mom who is making a difference with the next generation, every one of us needs to have patience, not only have other people have patience with us, but to have patience for ourselves.
Definitely.
That's really, we're all doing the best we can.
Yes, we
are.
The
best we can, regardless. And so it only calls for patience, because if we're pushing ourselves or criticizing ourselves and becoming an echo of those voices we may have grown up with, we're only hindering our progress and making life more miserable. When we practice patience, or I like to call it self-compassion, then we help ourselves along, just like we're helping our kids along when we have compassion for them, or the person in the next cubicle at work, or our neighbor who really needs our compassion. I find this is a pattern for people that come in and have such difficulty making some kind of progress or getting out of a rut that they're in. And I point out to them, look how compassionate you are to people around you. And I find this is the majority of people that I work with. They are very helpful to people around them. And I say, you know, you're really not compassionate. And sometimes I get a look of surprise, or their eyes get bigger or something. And I say, it's your compassion for yourself that you don't have. And I see their shoulders drop, and they get an expression, a knowing expression, and it's usually quite sad. They really know that they're not very nice to themselves.
Yeah, it's just clicking that realization into the conversation. They probably have never had anybody tell them that, hey, you know, stop being so hard on yourself.
Yes.
So how do you teach those kind of skills, Kevin?
It takes conscious action. And those are two key words. Conscious is willful, purposeful, and you're thinking of it, you're planning of it, and you make sure that you're doing things not just because it's a habit, but you set it out as a conscious goal or task or an item on a to-do list, and the action is to take some sort of action that says to the self, I'm worth it, did a good job, something that is rewarding. And so those conscious actions start to counterbalance the subconscious or habitual messages that play in our heads. It's like a tape that plays in our head. We're not so conscious. We're not purposely doing it. That's just the tape that's been there for years, and it just plays and plays and plays. And so to counteract that, we need to do something that's conscious, purposeful, and so as some kind of an action. The action can be as simple as something that we say to ourselves. And it could be something as purposeful or action-oriented as reciting some kind of a positive affirmation. And it's these actions that counteract those unconscious things that keep running through our heads.
Right. And then, Kevin, we're going to take a short break. I want to come back and then ask you about what you would recommend for a positive affirmation, okay?
Absolutely. That'd be great.
The Chicago School of Professional Psychology offers numerous psychology, behavioral, and health-related science graduate degrees at three campuses, Los Angeles, California, including branches in Westwood and Irvine, Chicago, Illinois, and Washington, D.C., and online. The Chicago School prepares students to meet the ever-changing mental health needs of society through classroom experience and real-world training. The Chicago School Counseling Centers in Irvine and Westwood provide caring, confidential, and affordable psychological services to individuals and their families. For more information, visit thechicagoschool.edu.
And I'd like to thank the Chicago School for sponsoring Psych One-on-One on SkidRowStudios.com. And I'd also like to put out a personal thanks to Jarvis Sams and Sean Lewis for doing my commercial. Thank you very much. Now, Kevin, I would like to come back and ask you, what is a positive affirmation?
You know, that's interesting because there is no formula, and it's so individual for each person. An example of a positive affirmation could be something as simple as, I totally love myself and I completely accept myself. It could be something as simple as, I did a good job today. Those are simple examples. They can be longer. They can be something from your faith-based tradition. It could be a prayer. It could be a scripture verse. So these affirmations are what works best for you. There's no one affirmation that I would ever say, okay, you need to use this one, because it has to be something that resonates with the individual. That's where the diversity comes in.
Yeah, and it's not like one affirmation fits all, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely, and it's different for everybody. Somebody's going to come from a Buddhist tradition. Somebody else is going to come from something that just makes them feel good because it reminds them of being at grandma's house as a little girl, and that's going to feel good to her. So it really, it's different for everybody.
And do you find that once you work with a client, coming up with a positive affirmation or two, do you find that sometimes they have a hard time just saying those words out loud to you, like it's a foreign concept to them?
Yes, it is. There's an approach that I have used called meridian tapping. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
I haven't heard of that.
It comes out of acupressure, where they put a needle in a meridian point on the body, and there's hundreds of meridian points, and each one of them have to do with a different organ in the body or a different emotion that we might feel. And meridian tapping, instead of putting needles under the skin. It's simply taking the finger and tapping on this as we hold that kind of emotion. And it dispels that. And there's a pattern to this. And one of the things that we do when we do meridian tapping is what's called the setup. And that beginning is the first example that I gave you. As we tap on, it's the karate chop place, we call it. It's the meaty part of the side of the hand. And just tapping there by saying, I totally love myself, and I completely accept myself. And that's repeated three times. You know, some clients just freeze up. They can't even say that out loud. And it's so difficult sometimes, wading through all those layers of baggage that we've brought with us as we develop into adults. Some people, it's just as easy as could be. And for that approach, it doesn't really matter. As long as you say it, eventually it becomes true.
Yes, and that sounds like that's an easy enough technique that most people could do it, even children.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and sometimes it sounds like it's reprogramming what, you know, the like you said, the layers and layers of baggage that people bring in with them to therapy and just carry around with them in life in general.
Yes. It's not only reprogramming, because it's that. It's also an example of what I said earlier about self-compassion. Just saying something nice to yourself does every bit as good as saying something nice to another person does for them.
Right. And that, you know, just the process of replacement of negative self messages, I think would be a relatively easy thing to do. I mean, yes, it does take practice. And like you said, it takes patience, and patience is a process. But
oh, yeah.
Just, you know, rewriting one's history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, further examples, you asked for examples of affirmations. I want to give you some examples of actions that we can take, because it's an affirmation is an example, but there's more active actions that we can take too. You know, there's a YouTube, actually it's a TED Talk, that I've referred so many clients to. It's by Sean Achor, and that's spelled A-C-H-O-R. And he talks about taking actions as it was researched. These five specific actions were proven through research to bring a sense of well-being with people. And his suggestions were to, on a daily basis, write down three gratitudes, three things that you're thankful for. The second one was to write in a journal, and specifically, not just, well, I went and bought some milk at the store, but specifically write about one positive experience that you've had from the last 24 hours. He also mentioned exercise. He mentioned meditation. And then he said the fifth one is performing some random act of kindness. Do something kind for somebody. And do all five of these every day, and it's measurable how the sense of well-being is elevated from these kinds of actions.
That sounds like a wonderful recipe. That's a great example, Kevin. Thank you for that. I want to also mention to our listeners, if you cannot listen to this whole podcast, we are archived at skidrowstudios.com the next day on Tuesdays, and you can pull this show or any previous shows up from Psych One-on-One. We are also available on Stitcher, Facebook, and iTunes Store. So please tap into it. We're here anytime, and we'd love to hear from you. So Kevin, can you tell us about some of the other projects that you're involved with?
One of my projects I'm most excited about is taking this approach of taking action I've designed a system around this that's already helped lots and lots of clients and even friends. It's called the Well-Being Project, and what I'm doing is developing a mobile app for it. The first thing I'm doing is creating a website. It's at elevateyourself.org, and it's allowing individuals to choose 10 items of action. They can use those five suggested ones from Sean Apor. They can do something very unique for themselves, as long as it feels to them like, if I do this action, I'm going to be better off. And they give themselves a point for each one of these items. When they average 7.5 points over several days, they're doing really well. It's unreasonable to think that we're going to do all 10 of these every single day, and then the likelihood is that we're going to beat ourselves up if we're not doing things perfectly. And so if you're averaging a 7.5, your sense of well-being is doing really well. It's not your happiness. Happiness is not the goal here. It's well-being that we're shooting for, because when you elevate your sense of well-being, you're going to have an elevated ability to do whatever you're trying to do, whether that's write a novel, whether it's lose 10 pounds, whether it's in recovery from an addiction, whether it's writing a new business plan. Whatever you're trying to do, it's just going to go better if you raise your sense of well-being. So that's a big project that I'm really excited about. I'm also doing a project called Advisory Board at CCRG. CCRG stands for the Center for Counseling, Recovery, and Growth. And this is going to give from 6 to 8 people that usually are in some kind of leadership role, whether they're a CEO, whether they're an entrepreneur. And it's going to be 3 hours a month where they get to sit together with a moderator, myself being a trained therapist, to moderate this, where they can say, this is what's going on in my life, this is what I'm struggling with, this is the decisions I have to make, give me your feedback. And then the other guys in the group become that person's advisory board, their personal advisory board. And I've seen some really wonderful things happen through that. So we're really excited to start advisory board at CCRG.
And when are you planning on starting that?
It's ongoing. We're already starting to form other groups. So you can get in touch with me at any time and be ready to start with the next group that starts.
And when do those groups usually go on?
You mean what day of the week?
Yes.
It depends on the group. The group decides what's going to be most effective for them. Mostly it's a Saturday. Sometimes it's a weekday in the late afternoon.
And is that in the Torrance area?
Yes, that's at the Center for Counseling, Recovery, and Growth in South Torrance.
Okay, both of those sound like really interesting projects and worthy of checking out. So again, those were elevateyourself.org and advisoryboard.ccrg. Was that correct?
That's not a website. That's just hosted at our regular website. It's at centercrg.com, and the project is called Advisory Board at CCRG.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for clarifying that. So with all of the different clients that you work with, what are the different approaches that you like to use? Like we had mentioned before, one size does not fit all once it comes to therapy and instilling positive psychology.
That's right. I find when somebody comes in, I never know what direction I'm going to take with a client, whether it's a brand new client or even a client I've been working with for a while, because this is the work. What they bring into the room is where we go. one angle that I find that I see necessary and helpful for a lot of people is teaching them about some simple communication tips. One thing that I just recently worked with a couple that in this session, I saw a pattern in the way he was talking. And it seemed like every third sentence, the word but was a big pivot point in that sentence. And I pointed, I turned to his wife, and I said, "Do you notice how much he says the word but?" And she really hadn't. And I said, "Let me teach you something to both of you, that the word but cancels out everything that is mentioned before that."
Right.
"Yeah, you look really great today, honey, but the dishes aren't done." And so that but cancels out anything nice or good that was said. And as I said this, the wife started nodding, and she didn't even realize it. And he kind of started to lean in because he could realize he does say this a lot, and he didn't realize how much that it cancels out the statement right before the but comes. And so I said, "What do you think a better way to process that?" And they said, "I'm going to," or "this is what I want." They didn't really have a good way to look at that. And I said, "How about just simply replacing but with another conjunction, and?"
Mm-hmm.
"You look really great today, and I'm hoping we can take care of the dishes when we get home." She doesn't want to hear about the dishes.
Really? I was going to say, you're still putting the dish thing in there.
Yeah, and this is probably a really poor example that I'm just pulling out of the air right now.
But I understand,
but
yeah.
What the "and" does is it keeps the first statement on the table, and it lets the next statement sit right next to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we tend to use that word quite a bit, but, and it just wipes that first thing off the table, and it doesn't even count anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, what would you say to a client that does the opposite? They'll say something negative at the beginning of the sentence, and then they'll throw the but in there, and then they'll try to cover it up with something positive at the end because they already know that they messed up at the beginning of the sentence.
Yeah, that's better. It's definitely better. And what happens with that is the negative still has a tendency to outweigh the positive.
Right.
You know, there's a ratio that somebody with a calculator in a lab somewhere came up with, and it's like 2.9 or 2.8. And they say that this number, you need like 2.9 times the positives to every one negative that you come up with in communication.
And how often does that happen in reality?
Oh, reality is so different from that prescription.
Yeah.
You know, we all know that. I mean, you don't have to be a clinician or somebody with a degree to figure that out, because we all recognize it as happening every day, coming out of our own mouth as well as the people around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we're bombarded by negative messages day in, day out, and it just gets stuck in our subconscious minds, and then we're spewing out negativity when we don't even realize it until, you know, until we almost get retrained to stop and go, "Whoa, okay, hold on. I didn't need to say something that was that bad or you know, that hurtful or whatever." We have to stop ourselves in our own tracks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like analogy. There was a story that's been told 100 times. Your listeners have probably heard it, where the dad tells the son, "Go put these nails in the fence, hammer each one of them in." And like, "Why am I doing this? Just do what you're told." So he comes back, he's obedient, and then the dad says, "Okay, I want you to go back and I want you to remove all the nails." And, "Oh man, why am I doing this?" And he removes those nails. And as he's finishing, the dad comes out and he says, "Well, the nails are gone, but the holes are still there. I want you to get rid of the holes. Dad, how can I get rid of the holes? Once they're in there, they're already there. And a point he makes is, son, every time you say something negative to somebody, you can't withdraw your words.
Mm-hmm.
The impact that negative had is always going to be there. Even though you apologize and remove the nail, the hole's still there. The feeling that it produced is still having its effect.
Yeah, and it's a ripple effect sometimes. You can say something negative to somebody, and it looks like it's all, hunky-dory, business-as-usual situation right afterwards, but you don't know what the impact is after you've said something negative. If they go off and do something else, and they have time to think about what you said and broil in it and process it, and it could be really hurtful.
Yes, very much so. Our words just... I wish I had it in front of me. I just saw somebody posted on Facebook the other day something about the words and the impact that it has. Because it's light, and we may think that it didn't make much difference, but it certainly does.
Yeah, words are powerful, and I think a lot of people don't think of that enough in their daily transactions with other people.
And, words are powerful. And just my example of bringing up that quote that was on Facebook, whether it's Pinterest or anywhere on social media, we keep seeing these quotes that are designed really pretty and nice and stuff. And we tend to just kind of pass through them. And they're on our feed. And if we take time to read them, we just pass on to the next one. How impactful it is if we take some time to either save one of those on our phone and make a point to look at it again and remind ourselves, use some of these quotes or sayings that are positive and bring them to our mind again. It does have impact.
It does. And just to have those reminders around sometimes, I think, is helpful because we forget a lot of us go through our lives. We have our daily routine, and we don't think twice about, what we're doing at the time because we're over busy nowadays.
Oh boy, you got that right, and it goes back to the principle in ElevateYourself.org. It's about action. It's making that action to stop and reflect on that quote. It's another example of an action.
And are there other tricks that you teach your clients to help remember these positive quotes and affirmations and mantras or whatever they want to use? What other tricks do you use with your clients?
I would replace the word trick with simple action because as an action, it's something that we're in control of. We can choose whether we want to do it or not. And we don't have to do with this program, we don't have to do all 10. And the question becomes, do I want to do this? It's just one more thing to do. We have so many things to do in our busy days. And if we simply ask, will I be better off if I take this action? For myself, because I've been doing this system for about 9-10 months myself, and when I pose it to myself that way, there's really no reason that I want to skip this action because I don't have anything that's really huge. I think the thing that takes the longest for me is going to the gym. Most of them are quite short, and if I can say, yeah, that's going to make me better off, I can't really argue with myself and give myself a good reason not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So taking the action becomes something like maybe as simple as take 3 deep breaths and relax all your muscles. That's an action. You get a point for that.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody else, it's take a short walk. Maybe it's just walk around the building that they work in. Maybe somebody else says, take a walk around the block or just go down to the corner. It depends on where you are. For other people, it's an affirmation that they recite, or maybe it's a prayer. For maybe the next person, it's not just praying, but it's specifically praying with real intent and really communicate. For somebody else, it's give somebody a hug. So these are some suggestions that I give my clients, and it's all about their individuality, what's going to work for them. I've been working with one client that is really excited about this. He started doing it, and after a week, he came back, and he just had this, I don't even want to say smile on his face, but it looked more like contentment. And I asked him, I said, what's this been like so far? And usually I suggest people look again at the 10 items that they've chosen and modify them. See what works. Replace the ones that aren't working so well. And what his reply to me was, I feel so much more in control when I choose to do these actions. And I had to get a smile on my face because I saw here's a real transition that's happening for this guy. And I don't even recall what the specific reason he was in for therapy, but what he was trying to accomplish went more smoothly. Because he was building his own confidence by seeing, if I take action, it makes a difference. I'm in control.
And that is the key.
It's a win-win all over the place.
Yes, it is. And that is the key, is to regaining some of that sense of self-control again, because I think so many of us nowadays are just, there's so many things that are out of our control. That yeah. Just to have even one little moment of really feeling like we're in control of our destiny, we've got it together, we can make that sense grow and start, you know, like I said, you know, taking control and bringing in some of our goals and creating that well-being that we all deserve.
Yes, and you're right. It does apply to every one of us. And I find for some people, it works even more effectively. For instance, somebody who's struggling with some past trauma in their life, whether it's full-on post-traumatic stress disorder or whether it's having just been spoken to in an unkind way by a parent when we were growing up. Maybe it's a full-on trauma like physical abuse, or maybe an accident, a car accident that somebody was in. When we have a growing sense of I'm in control, I can act and I can accomplish something, it counteracts that sense of I'm here to be acted upon. And that makes such a big shift for people. None of us like being acted upon. And we feel more powerful and more confident when we act. Some people come in almost broken. And they feel like they have no choice. They have no control. They have no say so in how their life is going to go. And when I teach them this pretty basic but important concept that you don't have to be acted upon, you can act. It
right.
makes so much of a difference in their life. Their happiness level increases, their sense of well-being increases, and it's born out of their own experience when they go out and act. It's like when they're in the session with me, they're in the classroom. This is the lecture portion. And then when they leave, they go out and they live their life during the week. That's like going to the lab portion of the course. And they put things into action. and they start seeing, wow, I'm doing this. Look at the effect that this is having for me. Even if they're going to say, I'm going to take three deep breaths and relax all my muscles, they do it. Wow, that feels good. That did have an effect, and it took less than 30 seconds.
Exactly, and that can be done at the traffic lights, right?
Absolutely. That's awesome.
Especially in L.A. traffic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, there's a few traffic lights here.
Yeah, Southern California gives you a lot of chances for doing that deep breathing exercise.
Yep.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Kevin, from, you know, changing a concept of thinking, I'm a victim and I'm always going to be a victim. And changing that by doing certain steps, baby steps, just to make yeah. that change, all of a sudden you're the victor. You are accomplishing so much more. You're having more wins in your life. You're having more happiness. You're having actual joy in your life, and then you are transpiring that out to other people in your life, especially your family or your children. If you've had trauma in your life, you do not want to pass that on to your own children, and then they carry it on to their children also. It is such an ingrained pattern in some families that I think a lot of people don't realize that they do have a chance to break those chains.
Well, it's not only that, it goes back to, again, what we said earlier, this notion of responsibility. We have a responsibility to people around us to address our trauma, to address our depression, to address our sense of failure, to address our anxiety, because it affects people around us, and the most important people are our spouse and our children.
And ourselves.
Yeah. And to ourselves. We have a responsibility to ourselves. I like what Dennis Prager says. He's a radio, national radio personality now. He started in L.A. But he says, being unhappy is like inflicting bad breath on other people.
That's great.
We have a responsibility to take care of our personal hygiene because it's offensive to other people. Well, it's also offensive to other people if we walk around in a really bad mood.
Right. It just fogs up the air all over us, doesn't it?
That's right. And it's a model and teaches, especially children. We need to show them that it's not only a responsibility, it's our privilege to be happy, to feel good. And we can feel good even though there's some negative factors that are going on in our lives.
Right. It's like, don't be consumed by what is going on outside of us. We can only control what is going on inside of us most of the time. I mean, there are other factors that come in that, you know, change the picture, like biological factors, you know, brain chemicals and hormones. But for the most part, we do have control over that. And I love that you are teaching these affirmations to people, because it's a pretty simple thing to do, really. I mean, with a little practice and finding what is going to work for that person that's sitting in front of you, what is going to change your lives? What is going to change that whole in brain patterning of the negative tapes that they've carried around so long? You can erase those tapes eventually, and they're gone. Sometimes they're gone for good. Or if they play again, it's not as loud, but it can be changed.
That's for sure. And another one of these quotes just came to mind that I pinned on my Pinterest board. It says something like, don't let your struggle become your identity.
Yeah.
And so often we do that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's, if we let our depression tell us who we are, we're just going to be more depressed.
Yeah, it's a downward spiral, definitely.
Your identity is so much more than that.
It is, definitely, and it is worth fighting for happiness.
That's
so,
right.
Kevin, as we are wrapping up our last 5 minutes, do you have any tips for incorporating positive psychology into daily life for our listeners?
That's a big question, and really it's a recap of everything that we've been talking about in the show, and it's about taking conscious action to incorporate that positive psychology in what you're doing. Take steps that you've planned out. They can't be just grabbed out of the air in the moment. Plan things out. Write things down. What do you want to do? Do you want to do some meridian tapping as you're at that red light? Do you want to learn how to breathe and relax? Do you want to take it a step further and learn how to do a mini meditation as you maybe close the door to your office and just take 5 minutes and do some relaxation exercises? If you want to call somebody up randomly in your contact list from your phone and say something nice, maybe thank somebody for something. These are conscious actions that we can take on a regular basis and randomly when we find, you know, I'm not doing so hot today, maybe I'll do something to feed myself, to be compassionate for myself. And it's any one of these things that you write down and decide beforehand, this is going to make a difference for me.
Those are wonderful tips. Thank you. And if the listeners would like to go to those websites that you mentioned previously, can you repeat those?
Sure. One I didn't mention is GuyStuffCenter.com. The GuyStuff at CCRG is another division. The main website for the center is CenterCRG.com. And the system, the project of well-being is at ElevateYourself.org.
Wonderful. And do you have an email that possibly contact you by?
Sure. People could reach me at kevin@centercrg.com. And they can also, I didn't even mention real quick, I'll say the podcast that I produce for people in recovery is called Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. And they can simply find that by going to iTunes and search the iTunes store under even Kevin Bergen or Recovery Support.
Thank you so much, Kevin, for being my guest this evening and talking to us about positive psychology. It was very enlightening.
Thanks so much, Julianne. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank our listeners and also remind everybody, if you would like to touch base with this this program, Psych One-on-One, later, we do have everything archived on the skidrowstudios.com site. I was almost going to say .org because we've been talking about all these organizations, but it's skidrowstudios.com. And any kind of comments you'd like to call and make, we do have an answering machine at 800-893-9562. Again, that's 800-893-9562. If you'd like to contact me, it's at jgood8@verizon.net. That's jgood8@verizon.net. I'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions for future shows, I'd also like to get those in too. I'd like to hear what your thoughts and comments are about our shows. And if you're having any kind of difficulties, please by all means contact me. But I would like to thank everybody involved with the show. And I would love to thank you as being listeners and hang in there. Make your life better. And tune in to us next week, Monday, from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. This is Julianne Good for Psych One-on-One.